And welcome in Trailblazers courtside here on this Monday night. Mike Barrett, Mike Rice on Comcast Sportsnet as the Blazers last night losing to the Clippers in Los Angeles, now 22-22. And Rich Patterson, if you could take the radio out of our headsets, it'd be great. Trailblazers last night losing to the Clippers. Now we can hear.
But he says we haven't started yet.
Yeah, we actually have.
Yeah, well, yes, we have.
Trailblazers taking on the Clippers last night and falling. It was the back-to-back, home-and-home back-to-back set. And before the set starts, you say 1-1. I assume you take it.
Yes, with the Clippers. Now, Utah, you know, I have a little more expectations coming up that 1-1. But this 1-1 against the Clippers, team that's won 33-34 games, third, fourth best record in the NBA, 1-1's good.
All right. Coming up on the program tonight, this is the Courtside Tip-Off presented by Standard TV and Appliance. Of course, here with you for the next hour on Comcast Sportsnet, Neil Olshay, Trailblazers General Manager, will join us in the next segment. And then, of course, Dallas Mavericks are in town tomorrow night. Chuck Cooperstein, good friend of ours, will join us. He's the Mavs radio play-by-play announcer, one of the best in the NBA. He'll join us 6:35, and we'll talk about the Mavericks. You know, you talk about the Blazers, a team that can undergo a bit of a facelift after the season with some of the flexibility they have. Dallas, certainly one of those teams. As well.
Four teams are going to be the most interesting from the All-Star game on, and those four teams, Dallas, Lakers, Rockets, Blazers, and we'll talk about them tonight.
Nice prediction. It's a big week in sports, of course, the Super Bowl coming up. A lot of NBA action. Tiger Woods wins his 75th event today. 82. Sam Snead has the record. Does Tiger catch him this year or next year?
Well, when
better be quick about it.
Yeah, I'm quick. when Tiger Woods wins before the Masters, he usually wins the Masters.
Yeah. So. They say when he's won early in a season, he's won on average about six or seven events a year, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe have some more about Tiger later on. I don't know. But coming up next, it's all Blazers. Neil Olshay, Trailblazers General Manager, our guest here on Trailblazers Courtside on Comcast Sportsnet. And welcome in Trailblazers Courtside on the Blazers Radio Network, Comcast Sportsnet, and Trailblazers.com. Mike Barrett, Mike Rice back from Los Angeles last night where the Trailblazers fell to the Clippers. You start, just to get off the top here, talking about last night's game, 96-83, you kind of forget it was a 13-point game. Blazers were certainly in that ball game, and as we mentioned on the TV broadcast last night, the 7-0 run right before the end of the half. In fact, the runs at the end of the first three quarters really are what hurt the Trailblazers, but they were playing with intensity, both teams shooting a high percentage in that first half. It was a couple of little spurts is all it took for the Clippers to do their damage.
When you're a 500 team playing one of the best teams in the NBA, and the team has lost four in a row, because a lot of people say, how can that one spurt? But it really does change the mindset of the team that's 500. You go into a game and you think, we've got a great shot at winning, and you stay with them and you play as well as the Clippers. And then that spurt, bam, and then all of a sudden it changes the way you think about the game. Well, you know, it's back-to-back. We've already beaten them, you know, and you start justifying why you could lose this game. And those spurts do it. It just takes the mental edge off what you have going. And the Blazers really had something going. I mean, they weren't playing that great, and yet they were tied. So.
And LaMarcus, who, you know, had a good game in the home game, but not hugely impactful, 12 points, 5 rebounds. Last night, he did have it going. Blake Griffin had another great game against Portland, but Aldridge ends with 21-11 and 4 assists, had a great start to the ball game. And so, you know, we'll talk more about it and look at some of the numbers and whatnot, but Trailblazers dropped that one last night. Coming up on the program tonight, Trailblazers general manager Neil Olshea will join us in the next segment. We'll talk about, you know, we mentioned on the air last night about what he did with the Clippers, the fact that he was the guy who put that roster together, that Clipper team, and why Portland is set up to be in the same type of situation, or at the very least, to have the same opportunities, same flexibility. So we'll take the break. Chuck Cooperstein, Dallas Mavs radio play-by-play at the bottom of the hour. You've got Trailblazers courtside, back with Neil Olshea after this. And back in our Rose Garden studios, Trailblazers courtside, presented by Pacific Power, as always. Mike Baird along with Mike Rice. Trailblazers split the home and home back-to-back with the Clippers, and joining us now is Trailblazers general manager Neil Olshea. Neil, thanks for the time. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys?
We're good. You know, we talked on the air last night late in the game when we had a little bit to talk about. Haven't had one of those games like that in a while where we actually just had some times for conversation. We talked about you a little bit, and I was thinking about you in that second half. And was even thinking about it at the home game against the Clippers. It's a little bit odd watching a team that you had such a huge part in constructing playing against your current team like you have the last two games?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you know, clearly, you know, Andy Roser and Gary Sachs and Vinny have done a really nice job of, you know, bolstering the bench with guys like Lamar and Matt Barnes and Jamal Crawford who weren't a part of, you know, the team that I had constructed. But, you know, there's still a lot of people over there I think fondly of, and, you know, it's nice to see them doing well.
How much does a team's winning and losing figure into making trades in the NBA? They always seem like Danny Ainge is nervous about injuries and everything like that. You in that seat, how much does it play?
Well, look, I mean, I think the most dangerous thing, most dangerous word in the NBA is reactive.
Yeah.
And I think once you start reacting to, you know, things beyond your control, you know, you make bad decisions. And I think, you know, I think that you basically, you know, you need to have a plan. You need to try and execute that plan. Clearly, you make adjustments. But, you know, you can't let one thing alter your overall vision of where you're trying to take a franchise.
When a Grizzly team, you read in the paper as fans, they're trying to get under the cap they did with this trade. But then there's still mentioning of a Rudy Gay or a Zach. How much does general managers, other general managers, react to that and try to maybe steal a player from a team like the Grizz?
Well, I mean, look, you know, I can't talk about specific teams or, you know, or their players. What I can tell you is that usually by the time things hit, you know, the general media, they've already died on the vine. Because, you know, look, there's only 30 guys in this business. Most people don't talk about other teams and what they're trying to accomplish. And if they happen to be in a deal with another team, they don't want it to go away because it's become part of the public forum. So
you're saying things can be planted on occasion, or
the
media is a willing accomplice on occasion.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, how much that, you know, in order for someone to be an accomplice, something actually has to be conducted. And I think for the most part, when you look around the league at, you know, big deals that go on, very rarely are they played out in a public forum. I mean, they're done behind the scenes, they're done quickly. You know, and, you know, look, there's certainly always some low-hanging fruit that, you know, people can pick up on from the rumor mill. But, you know, the classier guys in the business don't put other people's business out there to feather their own nest.
All right, well, just past the midway point. Yeah, looking back, we know it was a good draft, a great draft. Have you been surprised by the immediate success, the composure, all the things we talk about when discussing Damian Lillard, seeing him through half of his first NBA season?
No, you know, I mean, I think that's what, you know, comes with drafting, you know, a guy who was in college for 4 years, played three, you had a lot of responsibility there in terms of, you know, the ownership stake he had in wins and losses for Weber State. You know, also being an Oakland kid helps because he plays, you know, plays Oakland and lives his life like a kid from Weber State. So he's the best of both worlds. But, you know, look, I mean, I think from a production standpoint, I don't think we would have maybe projected the numbers that he's gotten. But, you know, the gravitas, you know, the leadership, the way he carries himself, the composure, you know, that's why we used the sixth pick in the NBA draft on him.
And you got, of course, Myers Leonard as well, who had a setback with the ankle injury, but discuss he and Will Barton and what you've seen from them. We've seen a bigger role for Will as of late, and certainly a willingness to attempt to score and to bolster some production from the bench. Those two guys have been productive as well.
Yeah, they have. You know, Terry and I were discussing Myers today. You know, look, clearly taking a 20-year-old big that really only played 1 year of college because he didn't play much as a freshman is a totally different model than going after a guy like Damian. But, I think what we've asked Myers to do is, Terry and the coaches are asking him to do more of what we need from him, which is to be a dive guy to the rim, block shots, rebound, be a paint presence. And it's a little counter. He was more of a high post center coming out of Illinois. He's definitely more comfortable facing the basket. He's more comfortable shooting a jumper than a jump hook. And he's more of a team rebounder that'll, hold off his man as opposed to a guy who chases rebounds out of his area. So, I think what we're trying to do is, we're towing a very thin line. We want to develop, the other areas of his game while not neutralizing or losing what it is that made him so unique, which is a 7-footer that runs the floor like a deer. He's a big-time athlete with good hands and, a guy who up until last night was leading our team in free throw percentage.
Now, that leads us to how difficult is it to sit down at the start of the season, make a master plan, and then stick to it as a general manager? What kind of pressures do you live under?
Well, look, it takes discipline and it takes a supportive owner, my conversations with Paul started back during the interview process and, everybody was on board that where, Trailblazers were at the time was not in a position to win a championship. And it was incumbent upon me once Paul hired me to, to be as disciplined as possible, put a plan in place that we're all on board with from, from ownership through the front office and then, and then hire a coaching staff that was willing to work within the confines of that plan. And, look, at the minute that we find an opportunity, whether we generate it or it comes to us to accelerate that plan and, and move forward quicker, we're going to be ready to act. It's just right now, I think we're a little bit ahead of where we thought we would be, because of the development of Damian Lillard, because some of the guys, like Will Barton are showing flashes and, same thing with Myers and, the improvement of guys like J.J. Hickson and Nicholas Batum.
Well, and talk about Batum. That's what I was going to go to next, because oftentimes in the NBA, much is made of the guys who aren't playing up to their big new contracts, and there's all of these reasons given about the pressures. A lot of people predicted that maybe Nick would have trouble with handling a lot of the pressure that comes with that new deal. But to see the way he has played so far, I mean, obviously two triple-doubles in the past week, and we've seen his game evolve a little back to the basket stuff. He can play the pick and roll. Talk about what he has given you this season.
Well, I think it's twofold. I think one, there's times when, you love things from afar. And Nicholas was a player that we had coveted when we were in Los Angeles. And, we didn't see any of the flaws. We saw, the incredibly high ceiling, the versatility defensively, the ability to make plays, things that maybe you saw a little bit more of when he played for the French national team. But, 99% of the credit goes to Terry Stotts. And, the only credit that we can take as a front office is that we did wait to hire a coach until the roster composition was full, knowing we were hiring a coaching staff that was going to embrace the skill set of the players we had. And, no one has benefited more from Terry and his system and the freedom that he gives guys and the creativity on the offensive end than Nicholas.
Coach Stotts, you just mentioned him. How would you look at his performance so far this year?
Well, look, I think it speaks for itself. Our record in close games, the fact that, like you said, last night was the first time probably since the Dallas game back in November you guys have had a chance to actually, chat, at the end of a game calling the last couple of possessions. So, I think with eight new players, with a very young roster, with guys being asked to have larger roles, Nick and Wes were both part-time starters, and now they're, go-to guys on the perimeter, and, the load that LaMarcus had to carry, and, J.J. playing a little bit out of position at the five and a rookie point guard, I think it's pretty remarkable that we're sitting here at 22-22 at the halfway mark in the Western Conference and ahead of some of the premier teams in our league, guys like the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers that, we've been able to kind of put this thing together with a lot of moving parts, maybe quicker than some of our opponents. And like I said, Terry and his staff have just done an incredible job from the day they got hired, all the way through from Gerg's camp into preseason, an early bump in the road on that road trip when, Chicken Little and the sky was falling when we were 6-10. And, we've bounced back every time people have counted us out. You lose six in a row and then you beat, the Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Clippers back to back. So, you know, I tell you, you know, I've said it before, there's only two things you can ask out of a coaching staff, and, you know, that's, are the players receptive to their teaching, and do they compete every night? And clearly both of those questions are answered, you know, to the nth degree when it comes to Terry and the coaching staff.
You know, earlier you mentioned the owner. How much does an owner play into how active a general manager can be during the year?
Well, you know, look, I mean, you know, Paul is an aggressive owner, and Paul wants to win. And, you know, nobody is going to push us to be active and make the right kind of player acquisitions than Paul. And, you know, he's owned the team for a long time. He's had incredible success. He's had some rebuilding situations. And I think right now, you know, we've got, you know, a new president in Chris McGowan. He's got a new general manager and a new coach. And, you know, he's incredibly engaged right now. But, you know, I also know that, you know, he doesn't want to take, you know, one step forward and have it result in two steps back. I mean, he wants to know that we're going to build something sustainable here. And when we do put this together, you know, we're going to have a good long run. And I think when you look at the core of our roster, you know, we've got, you know, the second or third youngest team in the league in terms of guys that play 10 minutes or more. You know, we've been pretty prudent about how we've spent our money, so we have a lot of cap flexibility next summer. And, you know, Paul is going to drive us to be as aggressive as possible the minute an opportunity comes to, you know, as I've kind of said ad nauseum, you know, move the needle.
Well, with that in mind, you talk about sustainable, you know, growth and improvement. This team has terrific chemistry, and this is a real healthy locker room. And I know that's at times it's difficult to achieve chemistry, talking about, and it's sometimes even more difficult to hang on to. When you talk about the bench and guys you could add or could have added, how much does that play into your planning, that thought of the type of guys, the chemistry, what you're trying to keep consistent on a team when building it?
Well, look, I mean, I think the first step is you've got to know what your starting lineup is. And, you know, we went into the summer with, you know, with two major question marks, one at point guard and one at center. You know, I think we've answered the point guard, you know, situation. I mean, we really like J.J. Hickson, and he's clearly a quality NBA big. You know, the question is, you know, can you survive with a 6'9 center, even if your power forward and franchise player is 6'11? And, you know, we're still evaluating that part of the process. But what you don't want to do is take away your flexibility, you know, building a bench when at the end of the day, if your starting lineup isn't good enough. And, you know, and like I said, you know, that will be an issue we will address in the off season. But a lot of those guys, you know, I came into an organization that had invested 5 first round picks in, you know, Nolan and Luke and Elliot and Joel and Victor. And, you know, I felt a certain responsibility that we needed to figure out what we had with those assets and get them in. And it seemed like this was the right year to do that because there would be an opportunity to play significant minutes. They would have a chance to get on the floor. They would have a chance to develop with other young players. And, you know, I think, you know, we've gotten some answers on some of those guys. And, you know, on some, the jury is still out and we're still evaluating them. I think, you know, the success that Terry has had have changed the dynamics a little bit because, you know, we are a factor in the playoff race and we have responsibility to the fan base to do everything we can to win as many games as possible. And if we can be a playoff team, that's certainly something we want to do. You know, like I said, the only thing we're not going to do is, you know, jeopardize the flexibility to make major moves for incremental growth this year. You know, and I think, you know, the irony is twofold. One is, you know, if we're playing that well, you know, maybe the bench is contributing. It's just not in areas that are, you know, as visible, you know, to the public eye in terms of points or rebounds. But what they add from a chemistry standpoint or defensively, you know, things that they do bring to the table. And, you know, the ability of the coaching staff to rotate those guys in with the starters. So, you know, look, when we get the starting lineup completely solidified, we have a lot of resources. You know, we'll bolster the bench. And, you know, some of that is going to come with player development. Guys like Will Barton, you know, Myers Leonard stepping up, you know, Joel Freeland and Victor Claver's development. So, like I said, we have a lot of work left to do, but we're clearly, I think, a little bit ahead of the curve based on the job the coaching staff has done to this point.
Well, lastly, and we'll let you go, and I asked this question last, kind of thinking what I was already thinking about it, and that's talking about LaMarcus. We take him for granted on occasion, and you take his consistency for granted. There's lots of nights where we'll, you know, be looking down at the stat sheet or getting late in the game, and wow, he's got 20-10 again, and he's shooting over 50%. He's getting to the free throw line. Talk about LaMarcus, what you saw from the outside as a Blazer opponent, and now what you've seen this year, seeing him up close, and the fact that he's going to represent the West again in the All-Star game.
Yeah, you know, I think we're very spoiled to have LaMarcus. You know, like you said, I mean, he's one of those guys, you walk out of the gym and say, wow, LaMarcus had a nice game. And you look down and he had, you know, 20 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, a block, block and a half, a steal, you know, and he shot a high percentage. So, you know, I think knowing you've got that anchor, you know, someone that, you know, you're going to go into a game every night, know what you're going to get out of LaMarcus. He can have huge nights as well, but he doesn't have a selfish bone in his body. And, you know, and I think LaMarcus, you know, has really shown, you know, his loyalty to this organization because, you know, he of all people has been through, you know, several transitions for this franchise, you know, from the Jailblazers to the youth movement to a lot of veterans that have been at other stops around the league last year to right back to more of a youth movement again. And he's never wavered. His production has never dipped. He's been a team first guy the entire time. You know, the people, you know, he's not as vocal. You know, he's not as colorful, but in the locker room, he has an incredible presence. Everybody in the building respects him. They respect the job that he does and the fact that he puts the game of basketball first. So, like I said, we're very spoiled to have him, and I don't think we would be where we are right now with anybody else in the league at that position because of just how solid we are and the guys knowing we always have the ability to get the ball to L.A. late in the clock, late in the game, you know, where he can deliver for us.
Great stuff, Neil. We appreciate the time. As always, keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Neil Olshey, Trailblazers General Manager, joining us here on Trailblazers Courtside. We'll take a break. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk a little Dallas Mavs because, boy, we'll face them not only tomorrow night, but on the next road trip as well. So twice in the next week or so, Blazers taking on Dallas. We'll get the latest on them. That's a team, as we said before. They have some flexibility and perhaps some major changes to come. Chuck Cooperstein will join us bottom of the hour. Trailblazers Courtside back after this. We want to thank Neil Olshey for joining us here on Trailblazers Courtside, Portland and Dallas tomorrow night. As the Trailblazers get set to play two more home games and then a long road trip, long six-game trip. You know, and as I bring that up, we don't look ahead a lot. I think we joke about that. Have you, Mike Rice, Portland now 22-22, a lot of guys who are into the analytics of the NBA have said Portland has the most difficult remaining schedule of any NBA team. Have you thought now, after perhaps your expectations have been readjusted for the 10th time this season, have you kind of projected now where you think this team could end up?
You know, I looked at it very carefully from four teams, and I picked the four teams that I think will battle for the last playoff spot. I didn't look at these teams as finishing seventh, sixth, no matter how they did, simply for one reason. And the four teams were Dallas, Rockets, Lakers, and Blazers. All right. Those four teams, I figure, will, you know, battle right up to the end. And the reason they can't go any higher, all you have to do is look at Dallas is 7-16 on the road. Rockets are 9-14 on the road. Lakers 5-15 on the road, and the Blazers are 7-14 on the road. So not one of them has shown that they have the ability to really step out and win road games. All of them can win at home. Now, if you look at who has the best schedule, and I look at it as more not so much playing above 500 teams, like the Blazers really can play well at home against above 500 teams. The crowd gets enthused, the players, you know, if it's Miami or the Lakers, whoever. I look at how they win on the road. To me, that's the benchmark of a playoff team, how they do on the road. Dallas has the best schedule left. Because they, if you look at what they have done so far, they've played two more road games than home. So going down the stretch, they have a better home schedule. The Lakers have played four more home games right now. So
they have a seven-game road trip coming up around the Grammys.
And that'll even it out. But how they do on that seven-game road trip, now that they think they've won two games in a row and they've got it all back, their chemistry back, and it goes to one guy, Kobe decided the last two games to pass the ball. He's averaged 10 shots a game where he was averaging 21 shots a game in their previous games. And he's averaged 14 assists a game the last two games. So what does that tell you? They look great the last two games. Why? You tell me.
Kobe passes the ball.
Kobe's passing the ball, and he's including everybody.
Didn't have to be a rocket scientist there, Buck, did I?
Yeah. Okay. Now, all of a sudden, someone says to him, ooh, you're not the leader in points anymore in the NBA. Now, does he change overnight? He could do it just like that. You know, one writer writes a column. So the Lakers, they have a chance, but they're terrible on the road, 5-15, and they have the worst road record coming up of all the contenders. The Blazers have played two more home games than away games. Now, we'll make up for that starting next Sunday when we leave for that five-game road trip.
Six-game road trip.
Ooh, I'm already.
Yeah, don't say that.
Yeah, right. So, you know, but how they do on that road trip will determine how they finish in the playoffs.
And it's not easy.
Believe me, it's not easy. And Dallas, we said, has the best. The Rockets have played the same amount of games home and away, and they have the best road record. So if you're looking for a team right now, and I didn't even include Utah in there because Utah has the easiest schedule of all, and I think they'll finish seventh, and I think the Rockets have the best chance to finish eighth. The Blazers ninth, the Lakers in Dallas. Now, both the Lakers and Dallas have shown they've won 5 out of 6 Dallas since Dirk has been back.
Yes.
So right away, they're starting to win. And Dallas has always been able to win on the road with Dirk Nowitzki.
All right, well, we're going to talk Dallas more coming up next. Chuck Cooperstein, play-by-play broadcaster for the Mavs. It's also very meaningful that Portland already has 2 wins over Houston, 1 on the road, and they have a win over Memphis on the road. Those are those wins during the season that late in the season, when you're competing with those teams, gives you a full game advantage in the standings if you can win that season series. Back with Chuck Cooperstein right after this. Trailblazers courtside, Mike Barrett, Mike Rice, Trailblazers and Dallas Mavs coming up tomorrow night. Of course, Blazers lost to the Clippers last night in Los Angeles, one night after beating the Clippers in Portland, so they split that home-and-home. Of course, one of those kind of odd home-and-home sets coming up with Utah later in the week, but first up is Dallas, and joining us now is Chuck Cooperstein, good friend of ours and the radio play-by-play voice of the Dallas Mavericks. Chuck, how you doing?
Good evening, guys. How are you?
We're doing fine. You know, we were talking with Neil O'Shea early in the program about Portland, and we were talking about flexibility and coming up in the offseason and perhaps some changes and a roster that was designed to have flexibility. Dallas is also one of those teams that is designed to have some flexibility. You know, Dwight Howard is probably seen as the end-all for Dallas at this point. Is that still the case in Dallas, even after the Lakers' struggles so far? And should we expect huge changes coming up in the offseason?
Well, I think you'd have to. I mean, when you look at the roster, guys, and you see that, you know, Dirk's under contract for next year. Sean Marion's under contract for next year. Vince Carter is under contract for next year, although he could be bought out for $2 million. Only $2 million of that is guaranteed. And then the three rookies who are on the team right now, you know, the Jared Cunningham, Jay Crowder, and Bernard James. Other than that, everybody's free. So right. You have to expect there's going to be some pretty significant change. Now, you know, what that results in is obviously anyone's guess. I mean, Dwight is everybody's, you know, pipe dream. But, you know, it's still hard, as much as you want to dream about the Lakers imploding and Dwight being unhappy with Kobe and all that, and that he puts himself out there that he could be made available. It's just hard to believe that ultimately with the lineage of Lakers centers going all the way back to George Mikan that Dwight would think about really leaving and going someplace else. But, you know, the Mavericks are, if it's not Dwight, I mean, they still have money to spend on someone of significance. And again, with the roster being what it is, it's not like you can't spend that money on a position that can't help this team, because clearly they're going to need help in a lot of areas.
Now, we just went over a little scenario that the Dallas and the Lakers have the same record at 19-25. And we looked at the Rockets and the Blazers, their home and away record and their schedule for the remaining time. Will Dallas really – they've won five out of the last six now with Dirk, so they're starting to move a little bit. How much do they think they have a chance to make the playoffs this year?
I think, Mike, they believe it, that they're in position now. Now, if you had told me that a couple of weeks ago when they had lost 13 of 15 and had lost six in a row, you know, I don't think you would have been getting that answer. But given, you know, that they've played well, that the Blazers went through their long losing streak, the Rockets went through theirs, you know, those teams kind of had to come back to the Mavericks to give them a chance. It happened. And now, you know, there's a ton of games left, but there's, you know, there's 40 games or yeah. So, you know, 38 games left in the season. I mean, there's a ton of time. But obviously, games like tomorrow night are absolutely monstrous. I mean, not just for the Mavericks, but certainly for the Trailblazers, too, to try to hold them off.
Well, we talked about that with you know, the Blazers early in the season beat Houston here and beat Houston in Houston, already has a road win at Memphis, and it's never too early, as you just said, to start thinking about that, because these are teams that are going to most likely be, you hope if you're a Blazer fan, in that logjam fighting for that, for a playoff spot late in the season. So that speaks to what you're talking about. These kind of games are the ones you look back on later, and they very well could decide who gets in and who doesn't get in. Would you think, with Dirk being back now and the Mavs on a little better track, it just seems like the center position maybe is the only thing that is not, and it's not that it's not quality for the Mavs, but what they're using four different centers now, kind of rotating them and almost balancing the minutes. You talk about Bernard James, who started what last night, Elton Brand, Chris right. Kaman, Brandon Wright. You get four guys you can use there, which is a positive, but the only guy who's speaking out a little bit Kaman. Negatively about it is Chris Kaman.
Yeah, and can he upset yeah. anything?
Well, you know, he hasn't played well, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, the issue for Rick Carlisle is defense, okay? It's defense and energy. What are you going to come with? And the thing that he knows about Bernard James is that he will play with energy and passion and commitment on the defensive end. He's not going to do much on the offensive end. I mean, he, you know, he can play around the rim and, you know, clean up some garbage and whatnot. But that's what he was looking for out of that position. And remember, if you go back a couple of years ago when the Mavericks won the championship, you know, they had Deshaun Stevenson in the starting lineup primarily because of his energy on the defensive end. Rick wants somebody on the floor who's going to be able to bring that to this team. This has not been a particularly good defensive team. They're like 22nd in defensive rating in the league. So that's not where they want to be by any stretch of the imagination. And I think what we saw last night against Phoenix was the anomaly, really the exception rather than the rule. You know, Elton Brand's been terrific here lately, and you know he had 12 points in 17 minutes last night. They didn't really need him last night. You know, Kaman, I still think has value and showed that in the Orlando game last Sunday when he came off the bench in the second half and really started knocking down some shots. And Brandon Wright's been out of the rotation. I mean, Brandon Wright before last night had played 13 minutes in the 13 previous games. So the matchup with Phoenix has been a good one all in the two games that they played. So I think Rick was looking at something like that. But, you know, I think this it's Brand and it's, you know, James to kind of give them energy, and Kaman is still there. So I think that's kind of what we're looking at.
Yeah, you know, if you look at what Rick Carlisle, they have eight new guys come in this year. Dirk was out for 3 months. You know, I kind of go along with what Kaman said. I never expected to come in with this situation the way it is. So if he doesn't play, will they? No one listen to him, Kaman, in the locker room? Will it won't be a problem for Rick Carlisle, will it, going down the stretch?
No, I think Rick, you know, Rick is not happy – not having a set rotation. I mean, he's a big fan of keeping players on edge and always using the term be ready, but he's like any other coach, Mike, and you know this. I mean, he'd love to know the 9 or 10 guys that you're going to run out there every single night and yeah. how you're going to bring them in the game and at what point in the game you're going to bring them in. The Mavericks just really haven't had that luxury yet, although, you know, they have gotten closer to that. I mean, again, you know, the center thing last night was different, and of course, you know, the point guard situation's been interesting because Darren Collison has had some good games. he's played very well here late, but there have been moments even in this stretch of good play where he's been, you know, yanked out in crucial times. And Mike James was brought in, and, you know, Roddy Bobois stepped up the other night against San Antonio when nobody had anything going, and he had his best game in almost a full calendar year. So, you know, there's no real, you know, there's no.
Mayo knows how to play for O.J. Mayo. He had a nice thing going at the end of the game with Jason Terry. We always said, uh-oh, here comes the pick and roll at the elbow. How are the Blazers going to defend it? It was not what is Dallas going to do. It's how are they going to defend it? And they don't have that anymore. O.J. Mayo goes off on his own and scores. And so I think he's a year older, taking 3 months off. I still think he's got 18 to 20 points in his system next year, but I don't think he'll be the factor rebounding that he has been in the past. So, you know, he's been a franchise, whereas LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, they have a ton of cap space. They have guys on their final year of their contracts in Dallas, so they're going to do a lot. And I think the Blazers have a opportunity, but the Blazers have an established four going for them right now, a younger LaMarcus Aldridge. So they have, I think, a lot more going for them.
Nick signed to a new deal. He's 24 years old. Damian, obviously, having a great season. Myers Leonard, who's shown promise as a young rookie center. Yeah, you get excited. You start thinking about it that way, especially when you compare it to a team that just won a championship. You know, you talk about close games and how they can decide your season, obviously, as the season wears on, and how they can define you, certainly when it comes to confidence in clutch situations. We've talked about Portland up until the losing streak of having such a great record in tight games, and they still do. Dallas is 1-8 in overtime games. And I guess if you want to talk about, you know, you mentioned Jason Terry not being there for Dallas this year, or maybe not knowing what they are now that they've lost such a big part of what made them what they were with Terry and Nowitzki. 1-8, though, in overtime. I guess it speaks to two things. One thing, they don't have Terry anymore, and they don't have that closer. But the other side of it is, you've got to give them confidence a little bit, knowing how good they could be if they just simply had gotten a couple of the big shots to fall.
Yeah, and once again, it gets back to who can win on the road coming down the stretch. If Dirk can regain what he had in years past, they'll be a good road team. But right now they're 7-16. The Rockets 9-14. The Lakers 5-15. You have to think. And we'll know after this next Laker. Lakers are on a 7-game road trip. Blazers are on a 6-game road trip coming up. At the end of those road trips, before the All-Star break, we'll know, I believe, which team is going to finish in the 8th spot in the playoff race. So we won't have to wait for the second half of the season. I think these next road trips are – and I think this game tomorrow – as Chuck said, this is a big game for Dallas to win a game against the team they're competing against for the playoffs. Big game for Dallas and Portland.
And to win on the road, as you pointed out, is so important. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of Trailblazers Courtside right after this. Final segment of Trailblazers Courtside. That's 3-for-3. That's 4. Oh, I had one rim off. Nice shot. You didn't even draw iron on that one. As Blazers getting set to take on Dallas, you talked about the importance of the game tomorrow night for both teams, for Portland and for Dallas. And I mentioned earlier when we were talking about these conference games, that's how big those games were early, that road win at Houston. And I remember leaving that arena saying, boy, if you just break through in one of these games, and not only did Portland do it in Houston, and then they got some good luck, some good timing when Zach Randolph didn't play in Memphis, and they got a road win in Memphis as well. So, you know, Memphis should be out of that log jam, but at least it gives you another road win against a Western team.
Well, they're 13 games. What Memphis, they're 13 games above 500. What Memphis has not going against them, they keep talking about trading them all. They've solved their luxury tax situation this year by trading off some guys that really played for them coming off the bench. But they still, Rudy Gay, Zach Randolph still being mentioned as guys that may get traded for luxury tax purposes
they're in
the future.
That's
yes.
A team that's got financial trouble.
They got financial problems.
Organization, but just their payroll problem. The producer of this fine program tonight is Adam Willis, Phil Beard, our director, Greg St. Martin, and video, John McConnell. Graphics, Corey Griffin, Buck and Curry. Corey Griffin doing audio tonight. His board crashed a while ago. That's why we went down for a few minutes, but nice job getting everything back up. Bruce Williams on the scene as well, our engineer. Justin Moulter, online coordinator. Curry and Buck in here on cameras, and the captain, Rich Patterson, back in Studio C.
And don't forget,
Rich, nice job scrambling as well. Rich in high definition, by the way, now.
Yeah.
One minute, by the way.
And don't
forget. Oh, thanks.
Don't forget Sarah, who monitors all our off-the-air stuff.
that was nice, too. So we always appreciate that. But, you know, you do have technical difficulties once in a while. I don't have any problem pulling back the curtain and talking about that stuff. We almost had to run down the hall, do the rest of the show old school style.
Retro style.
Like we used to do it.
Yeah.
I used to referee you and Steve Jones. That was the reason I was brought on the dang program about 14 years ago, because you guys just argue for 2 hours, and it was awful radio. To get somebody in there to at least monitor a little bit and sit in the chair and sit between you two guys. Blazers, we're on Comcast tomorrow night, right? Blazers and Mavericks on Comcast Sportsnet tomorrow night. Pre-game show at 6:30. We'll have the ball game at 7 o'clock. Then, of course, Blazers overtime. And then, as always, Talkin' Ball follows that. And, of course, the radio network with Wheels and Tone has it as well. Blazers and Mavs. For our entire crew and for Mike Rice, I'm Mike Barrett. Thanks for watching and listening. Talk to you tomorrow night.